Hello, everybody. I am back. We are back. Mind Clickers is back. Season 5, Episode 1. It's been, I want to say, a year and a half, 2 years in the making, but we're finally back, and I'm joined with one of my all-time best guests and best mates, Nick on RL for Episode 1. You know, it's been a little while, and a lot has changed in the last time we've chatted, so I'm really keen to jump in and have a chat with you today, mate. It's been a while. It's been a while.
It has been a while. You've been making Lance and I haven't. So that obviously contributes to not seeing each other for a bit.
Yeah, no, sure. But I'm keen to jump into everything. Like, obviously, the last time we chatted, it was 2022. So we were going into Dallas Worlds. And that was back in the Dignitas days. But obviously, a lot's changed since then. You've had a bit of time on Falcons, a bit of time on M80. So what's it been like the last couple of years, and what's it been like for you personally?
So running through the timeline, Dig crashed out of Worlds, which was quite bad, but that team was so like chalked and given up. Like, you know, it's a bad team environment when you kind of have to have the conversation of like, okay, realistically after Gamers 8 in this event, like we're done as a team, like don't stress, like, It doesn't really matter. Like, yeah, you're just playing for your pride. You're just playing for your next team. We did really well in the Swiss. Then I got COVID, and everyone got COVID that Lynch. No one talked about it because no one knew what the rules were. And yeah, then we crashed out to, not really crashed out to Falcons, then we crashed out to the club, which was bad. I spent an entire offseason working with Dig to rebuild the roster, and unfortunately working with a lot of people that weren't great behind the scenes with Dig of like figuring out what they wanted to do, where I tend to think the coach should have a lot of say if you don't have a proper GM. And Baker is probably the closest thing to a proper GM, but even then he was moving up and down roles, which made it really awkward. Speaking of which, I also did have a Falcons offer on the table like the last like week before the season, but we had just signed Andy and Trees, and there was a bit of like, okay, I don't want to screw people over that have committed to me, even though the offer was better with a better team, obviously.
Yeah.
So we stuck with that, turned Falcons down pretty much at the 13th hour, which kind of killed me. but it obviously worked out because I ended up going back to Falcons anyway.
Yeah.
But then it was Andy, Dries Delta, which had the first splits were off because, I mean, we picked up Delta with, I think, 12 hours to go in the trade window because we were supposed to sign Zanil, which now he's on Dig, which is even funnier. Got that one early.
Yeah.
And he left us for Turbo Pulsa, missed three regionals. Unlucky. We had the contract on the table. Andy had signed because of Zanil, and then he pulled out last second. So we had to deal with that. So Delta pretty much had a 6-month contract. We understood after the first split he was gone pretty much no matter what, which is a really hard thing in a team environment because it's like, okay, we're putting this work in just to kick someone, which pretty much just meant we were just playing the first split.
Yeah.
Then we picked up Evo, which the Evo transfer window was just as hell. We tried out like 4 or 5 Brazilians. We got to negotiations with one of them. They came back and asked for 15K. We said, you're delusional. There's 3 days left in the trade window. It was also during Christmas, so every single lawyer was on vacation. So I was working with one or two of my contacts to figure out everything about visa laws and plan all the housing for a Brazilian, which I almost took a semester off to live in Cancun. Unfortunately, I missed out on that.
Imagine that.
Would have had a little bit of a tan on me eventually.
That could have been class.
Unfortunately, I'm still pale as hell. So all the Brazilians fell through. We were trying out a bunch of like rookies slash like new young players. Of, like, we just need more firepower. That was our entire logic of we just need talent. Eventually, we tried out Evo. Didn't really go great. I think we gave him like 1 scrim in total. And then the Rise fiasco happened. And Rise was supposed to go to V1. Calm was supposed to go to Optic. And that left Magic Bear in our team Discord because we had a buyout agreed. Our contract was agreed. Magic Bear thought he was a Dig player. We all thought he was a Dig player. And he wasn't a Dig player because of legalities and shit between Optic and Dig, and that was just chaos. So we told Evo, like, stay up, because it was at 6 p.m. I had been up since like 9 a.m. It turned into signing Evo, which not even signing, just agreeing with Evo at 2 a.m. Ross showed up was at 3 a.m. I remember talking to his mom with my org management at like 1 o'clock.
Oh my
God. And being like, hey, this is what's gonna happen. And they were all like, why is this so late? And it's like, well, seven other pieces just fell through. And your son benefited. That was rough. Like, getting Evo in, it was his first, I guess, competitive team. Because Axet was, he had one regional, went 0-9.
Yep.
He got benched. It was an interesting team environment. It started really poorly. We got absolutely, like, our teeth kicked in a bubble tourney. And we all just went, like, we cannot be losing to Alpha Cup. I remember I talked with Farah for quite a bit as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was like, you guys missed a regional. Like, how the hell do you bounce back from that? Because I'm not going to lie, like, the way we're playing, we're going to miss one.
Mm.
Like, this embarrassing of a tourney, you got to figure out a way. And he was like, yeah, I'm not going to lie. Like, everyone's starting to buy in a lot more once bad results happen. And the same thing happened with us.
Yeah.
Because Evo, like, he can't really have an ego. He's new on the team. Andy is one of my close friends. He can't really out-ego me.
Mm.
And Dries, I'd spent a lot of money on. So, or well, the org did, not me. Shout out Jack for paying for a bunch of transfers. But he pretty much bought in of like, this is going to be my realistic last team. Like, I got to make it work.
Mm.
It went really well. Everyone bought in. We got our top four. I think I was the only one delusional enough to say we'd get a top four before the regional even started. Like, I remember I was in Lawler's chat and he's like, yeah, I'm not gonna lie, you guys are like a top 12 team. Mid major. So, but I don't really blame him. I think budget wise we were 12th in NA as well, so it's like the biggest overachieving roster, I guess, since Queso, because Queso we were getting paid 10k for us four a month, which that's nothing. But this was also when salaries were overinflated, and then so I think we were the 12th salaried roster. We finished top five. We got our top four. We had a lot of internal issues after that and quals. Everything kind of just went up against the fence. It pretty much turned into the 2 months before the major. I think we had maybe the amount of good scrims that we had, I think I can count on my two hands, because it was just that much of ego and internal issues and people not liking each other and not buying into this idea of like, we'll make a roster move after. And it pretty much came into, does Dig trust me to kick people or does Dig kick me? They kicked me. Their season pretty much ended there, to be honest, because the team was still just so bad. Like, internally, not even individually. Like, individually, I've said it for quite a while, I think we could have been a consistent top three, top four team, where it's like, it was Gen G, FaZe, and then, to be honest, with G2, with Atomics, JNAP, Chicago, I think we had the firepower to actually compete with them.
Yep.
And I think, tactically, we probably had the ideas to compete with them, and didn't buy in.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at the next split, where it's like, Hoxer, Arsenal, LJ. Yeah, LJ is probably the best of the six, but Hoxer, yeah, he should probably be third or fourth on that list if we go on pure talent. And then it goes to like Optic, which was AJ, Magic, Ruddles, which we kind of had their number.
Mm.
And then I got kicked. So I got kicked. It was really awkward because it was the day of Gamers 8 quals.
Oh.
So I was preparing like the strategy for like the first three or four series of the day.
Yeah.
I got a call from my management and they were like, hey, like you're kicked. And I'm like,
really? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was at 2 p.m. The quals were at 7.
Yeah.
That killed me because I'm like, I'm just screwed because you guys waited until the trade window's done.
Oh.
So in my head, I'm like, I have a week or two until regionals. Like, which, yeah, I mean, I found out afterwards they were talking to coaches in LA, which is kind of an FU to me, in my opinion, because I did like that org a lot. I defended them a lot.
Yeah.
So that one felt a bit more of a betrayal as opposed to, like, if you're going to replace me, I'm fine with that. Replace me. But don't talk to my replacement for a week or two before I find out.
Yeah.
Because to be honest, me and Panda had issues, and I really disliked Panda for a while. And I remember we talked to Boston. He was like, what do you mean you didn't know? I was like, he's like, I had the contract for a week. And I'm like, crazy. What do you mean? Like, I was working for scrims that day. Like, what are we talking about?
Crazy.
So that wasn't great. I messaged Asam, I messaged Crestboard, because I tried out in the offseason with KRN, so Kaliers Rojas Nupa, and then Falcons came in as well. Ended up getting the Falcons job. They prioritized me, so Falcons definitely took me in under their wing a lot. They were very supportive. And those guys, it was very odd, because they were pretty much just like, they won everything, and then the first regional I come in, we get a top four, which is like, they never missed a grand final, and I'm like, for a second regional, I'm shocked. But to be honest, it was probably the biggest kick up the ass we needed, because I think then we won the second regional, and then we got lazy again, and then we all went, okay, like, we just need to buy in after we missed the major. We did. We put an insane amount of work in. To be honest, I still think it's the best Kaladin I might have looked probably since. We go on, we make top eight at Worlds. We lost to the two grand finalists, 4-2, both of them Vitality and BDS, which, like, sucks. To be honest, I think if we got, like, Liquid or something, we could have made a top four. It's kind of the way the cookie crumbles. We went 3-0 in Swiss. If you get five wins and your two losses are to the two grand finalists, there's always that bitter part of, like, could we have done better? But that's the way brackets work. Afterwards, at that point, I had already signed on to M80. They gave me a pre-contract very early into when I was with Falcons, because Falcons made it pretty clear to me I was there to develop to whom, which, I mean, fair play. He's made, two grand final? Or he's made a grand final, a top eight, and to be honest, probably like a top three favorite for Worlds. Forgot about Gamers 8. We picked up Nupo. He had a week of scrims. That was chaos. We were supposed to potentially play with Monkey Moon.
I remember that drama, yes.
Yeah, that was more legal stuff with contracts. And I have no clue. It was not great. I thought Nupo was probably the most gifted player I've ever worked with. Like, the way that he could not speak a word of English at all. I can speak maybe 10 words in Arabic, and none of them are helpful for Rocket League. So it's like, that kid would just pick up everything by my epic pen. Like, me drawing on the screen, he'd implement it in scrims, even without translations from, like, Ahmad. And it was like, what the hell is this kid? Like, this kid is destined to be number one in the world. And then they end up signing Rojas and Kaliers, which, fair enough. Like, those two are kind of a package. And then Twisted wasn't, or not Twisted, Rule 1 weren't great. Then they picked up Mesho, or then they became anything because of the Nupo scandal and didn't really pan out. But that kid's still just unreal. Then I signed with M80. M80 was, I wanted Yoris right from the start. I've been talking with him since Worlds. AJ became available, so I've kind of figured I only get Yoris because of AJ and kind of vice versa. So it's like, I kind of have to lock with them. I wanted Aeris as my first choice. I've been talking to him since June, of basically saying, like, don't sign a contract. Don't be dumb. Like, I will give you tryouts with Worlds players. Don't sign any contracts. We tried him out a lot. We offered, and by a lot, I mean 2 days before NRG heard I was trying him out, and then offered him a contract. We were pretty much done and dusted. Then SSG came in the picture. That screwed everything up, which is why Nas got the tryout. We ended up trying out Calm, Nolly, Astral. Is there anyone else? Mata. And we pretty much just offered Nas the spot. Like, it was like, you have this much talent. You're willing to move to North America for a 5-minute phone call. Like, screw it. Let's do it. And everything just kind of pandered out from there. We were the best team in the world on day ones of tournaments and the worst team in the world on day two of tournaments. And that's why you're introducing me as Nick on RL and not M80 Nick. So,
what a segue.
That's quite good, I think.
Yeah. Crazy. There's a lot to unpack there. It's been a hot minute. It definitely has.
Yeah, I do get passed around orgs, unfortunately.
What do you think, I guess backpedaling just a little bit, in terms of obviously working with an NA org and then in comparison working with a Saudi org, organizationally wise, what are the differences? Is it a little bit more structured over there? Is there a bit more, you know, is it even more of a hierarchy system? How does it work over there?
Saudi is great because they're very rich, but they also don't have a bunch of egos where they're like, okay. Like, they wanted to bring a North American/European person in, to help also work with structure of how do we like make boot camp slightly more efficient? What do we need to bring in? How does practice look like? How does coaching look like? Because it's the same with a lot of like underdeveloped regions where Saudi's a different one because they have the resources. You see like Brazil, like they often have all the players in the game, but then they don't have the support staff of like elite level psychologists or elite level coaches or elite level management. And it leads to a ton of bad decisions, but they just have the talent. Saudi's different because they have all the talent, but then they have the resources to buy the right people. Right. I worked with Azam, and Azam is probably the best manager I've ever worked with, where that dude actually just took care of everything. He brought all their jerseys, he brought all their cords, he brought all their controllers, he washed all the jerseys, he made sure food was ordered, he woke them up once. Like, he was a parent more so than anything, or a maid, I guess. But, like, when you're working with 16 to 19-year-olds, like, shit, I wasn't developed at 19. So it's like, it's so helpful. And he was genuinely probably one of the most favorite people I've ever worked with.
He's a great guy.
And yeah, I with M80, it was a lot more, it's a newer organization. They all come from shooters and FPS. So it's like, I was pretty much on my own for a lot of stuff.
Yep.
They were great for like negotiations, which was nice. But besides that, like the actual logistics sides, like the Saudi guys definitely were a lot more on top of it. They also have probably a lot more connections where it's like, M80 just wasn't the same. Dig was a lot more similar.
Yep.
But Dig was a lot more like Fortune 500 company of, okay, now I have to ask the CEO. Now I go to my general manager, goes to his manager, which goes to the CEO, and the CEO, who has never watched a game of Rocket League, is now going to make the decision on what players I signed. And I'm like, it's just not how it should work.
No.
But.
It's interesting to hear that, because obviously I've never had that first and foremost experience, because in OCA we've only got two people on an org. We don't have 17 people like managing stuff. So it's interesting to sort of hear that and sort of reflect on that. Obviously it's kind of wild how that works, and almost in a way, almost like a traditional company, right? Sort of that traditionalized based approach towards esports. And it's interesting because, as you mentioned, like, you got people who've never watched a game of Rocket League making decisions based on what?
Exactly. Just based on name value.
Interesting. Now, where my mind's been recently is, like, I guess looking towards the future, Rocket League, where are you at the moment? Because I am feeling, I don't know, do I want to feel hesitant? Do I want to feel uncertain? I don't know how I feel about it at the moment. It's a question. Obviously, next season, I've heard from a lot of casters, a lot of the boys, that it's going to be the big one, that they're going to go out. Like, last previous season was a trial by blast to see how it's going to work, see how it's going to be incorporated, see how LANs will function. And then next season, they're going to really implement it. What are your thoughts on it? How do you feel?
I don't know. And that's the nice way of saying I'm not super confident. Obviously, like, you look at every other esport, Blast is always outdone by ESL.
Yeah.
ESL has way more backing. It's like, I get people would rather not be funded by the state of Saudi Arabia, and that's totally fine if that's your views. But right now we're funded by Denmark, and Denmark is kind of killing our game. So shout out Blast for that. It's just frustrating stuff of, I hear there's sometimes more communication, but it's kind of pick and choose, which isn't great for a pro scene. And it's like, there's so many ideas that should have been implemented earlier and they don't. And we're like, even rules where I think they should probably actually get consultancy from, like, whether it be pros or people in the scene, and they just don't. And so it's like all the stupid rules they had, or rules changing after the first regional. It's like, okay, you can't do that, in my opinion. If it's a shit rule, it's a shit rule, but stick with the shit rule. Lack of formats sucks. I don't think people want to watch Swiss for every single regional, for every single LAN and the world championship. Removing wild card is awful. I don't know if we would have, I think we would have missed out on by like one series, but even still, it's like all those South African players, like, unless you're a top one or two team, doesn't work.
Yeah.
Unless you're like a top two OCE team, like, what's the point? Or maybe a top three team, like, what's the point of investing in the game?
Yeah.
Saudi's different because they have Saudi League, so they have like their own tournament circuit. But like besides that, it's like South America, what's the point of investing past the top like four? Mm. A lot of works took gambles on very cheap players and very cheap contracts for the upside, and some worked out, some didn't, but yeah. Like they're all getting dropped now.
Mm.
So unfortunately, you have players agreeing to terrible contracts because, to be honest, I guess that's what they're worth. But what do you do for the other 6 months? You're just screwed because nothing gets announced beforehand. I was pretty hesitant on how late things got announced, but that's also because of when they got picked. But yep. I don't know. It's very hard to go against ESL when they are just better at what they do. And maybe Blast will prove me wrong, but based on every other game, I don't believe they will.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, it's like you can kind of make connections here. If Gamers 8 is way less money now, like when it's the rival TO, it's like, okay, we've shot ourselves in the foot another way now. And wherever you stand, like with your beliefs, it's like there's a lot of people making a lot less money now, which sucks. Mm-hmm. But that's why the cookie crumbles. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot more people either go to minor regions just to be able to farm a contract or farm a land spot rather than take the risk and just have, oh, you finish fifth in North America, enjoy 6 months without getting paid. Minimum. Yeah. Maybe 7 or 8. That's like life.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on that? Because obviously I feel like on Twitter there's a lot of controversy about, oh, an NA player, where they're going to go in the offseason. Are they going to go farm a minor region? Are they going to, obviously we've had, you know, some stuff going on in APAC. Obviously I've been a part of that. What are your thoughts on it? You know, it makes sense on a logistic point wise in terms of, hey, I might not be able to make a major. If I can go to a different region, I could make a major. Am I taking away spots? Am I empowering the region? I feel there's a lot of mixed views on it.
I mean, like, the way I see it, I was probably the biggest advocate of changing the rules to, I think you have to be a majority from the region. If you want to add one import, go for it. Majority of an APAC team should be from Asia. A majority of a African team should be African.
Yeah.
And I mean, to be fair, I imported 2 players, so I just took advantage of the rules because they didn't close them, right? Yeah. Like, I think if the rules are there to be taken for, you probably should be able to take them. Does it suck? And is it a complete thing on the TO? Yeah, 100%. If they don't change it, there will not be a single African player at LANs next year. And I'm willing to bet there's not going to be a single Asian player at LANs next year.
Yeah,
so there may only be 3 OCE players next year. Because like, if you're going for spots, you take those 3 spots first and you say, screw 5th seed in Europe or 6th seed. Screw trying to get a top 6, top 7 in NA. Like, I can just go here and win.
Yeah.
And it's not hard.
Mm. Do you think it's worth the move, though, as well? Because obviously for us on Elevate, we moved to Asia for quite a while. I know that the boys didn't enjoy living in Thailand, and that was quite a hard time to go through just for Rocket League. Like, can we think about it? Like, we're going through all this trouble just to have the opportunity to play at a major and potentially do well. Do you think it's worth the hassle of moving to a new region?
It's different for you guys because it was also double the time length, right? So it was regionals every other week as opposed to every week.
Yeah.
Right? Wasn't it? Or is it still 6 weeks for a split?
No, back then it was 6 weeks because regional every second weekend.
Yeah, fair enough. It's hard because also with you guys, like, going to be honest, if you guys went 1-3, it was a success. Like, the teams that would be here would have a gamble at a top 8. And if you have a gamble at a top 8, then it's different because it's like, oh, well, now I get the invite spike for Gamers 8, and that's another 20-30k. And I'll have the extra spot for X, Y, and Z. It's like, it's not right. But also, yeah, it can suck living away from your country for 6 weeks. But if your option is getting paid 0 and missing majors, or suck it up and deal with it for a third of the year and make majors and do what you're actually trying to do, you suck it up, to be honest.
Yeah. It's interesting. It is very interesting. I'm keen to see what happens next season. I think that I feel like a player moving from EU to NA isn't as big as obviously a player moving from to a minor region. I think that pretty makes sense. I think most people can agree with that. But it's going to be interesting to see what sort of rules are enforced and if the 2/3 rule does get actually enforced.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Enough of the controversy. I'm sick of it. I'm keen to hear, obviously you're on the show, the mind, Nikon RL, he's here. I've sort of having, more so after lunch, I'm going through a bit of a reflection process myself about, you know, coaching and what it means to be a coach and those values that sort of outlie as a coach. And the biggest thing that I've sort of been thinking about is, you know, inspiration in terms of external influences, but then also internal influences as well upon, you know, your desire and motivation to be a coach. So I guess from its ground level, what inspires you to actually, you know, get up there and want to actually coach some boys and want to perform and want to, you know, do the best you can as an individual?
From a selfish perspective, it's probably legacy.
Mm.
Like, there is a part of me that goes, yeah, I do want to be recognized as one of the best coaches, if not the best coach in the world. Yeah. On pure resume, I probably worked with the best talent of young players as like ever. Mm. Like, I don't think many people can say they've worked with as many players that have went on to do unbelievable things as I have. Like, Rise, Joyo, Vatira, Jack, Yoris, Nas will be that, Nupo, TRK, and a lot of them, Evo, like a lot of those guys were discovered before, like I started working with them, which yeah. also makes it cool. So it's like, from a selfish perspective, I want to be known as someone who has consistently helped players make greater careers, and it's been very rough because obviously, like, this season, we were the best team in the world in day ones, and that kills you because it's like, well, there's obviously a mental battle here, and I don't know if that's my skill suit.
Mm.
So then you try and look for other things that still don't work.
Mm.
So then you're unfortunately faced with a lot of reflection of why didn't it work?
Yeah. But
the reason I do it is because I love what I do. Like, I started doing content, pretty much stopped because I don't enjoy it. I love seeing a vision pan out more so than anything of God knows what goes on in my mind. It's a bunch of hamsters running around, but they've created some very interesting ideas, and seeing them play out to paper and having everyone buy in and the team wise and the brotherhood and trying to travel the world, all these things, these benefits are all just from this idea of I want to see this game get to the best because I absolutely love this game more than anything.
Yep. Passion at its core. I love
it.
I think it makes sense, you know, wanting to sort of have a legacy, you know, you look back in 5-10 years and sort of have a reflection about what's happened, where you've been. It's not every day that you get to travel the world, right?
Yeah, no, I think Rocket League in general has shaped me to be a lot different of a human than a lot of people like that I know or that people in my age range have, like, I've been able to travel to Asia. I've been able to travel to Europe. I've been able to travel all over North America, all over pretty much the world.
Yeah.
I've been able to do a lot of really cool things because of the financial benefits of what I do.
Mm.
Basically, brought me through college for nearly free my last 2 years, and it's paid off my first 2 years. And I've been in a very lucky position, so I think it would be a bit of a spit in the face to whether it be the company or the fans or the players I've worked with to be coming in at 10% or 50% or 70%. Yeah. Everyone has those days that they do, but there's still that big idea of I cannot retire and be happy with what I've done if I don't have a trophy.
Okay.
And it's a huge ego thing, and that's fine because I think you have to have an ego to work in sports or esports or any type of competition.
Yeah.
But if I were to truly look back and go, the closest I got was a major final and a top 4 at Gamers 8.
So close.
It would just feel like, damn. Or maybe if that one series against Vitality swings, I think we win that world championship.
Mm.
And it's just like, damn. Like, I think like 70% of my LAN losses are either to the finalist or the winner. That's like some of these kind of start flipping my way eventually, right? Like, but that's why the cookie crumbles.
Do you ever look back and think, I know I did it personally, like I'm reflecting back to Dallas Worlds when we're on stage, Renegades versus NRG, great series. My first time at a main event, you know, or first season for me. And after that series, like I feel like there was a couple of games, I think we were in the lead, like a 3-1 lead in game 4 or game 5, I can't remember what it was, CJ probably knows it off the top of his head. But do you ever think back after a series and think, what could I have done better as a coach? Could I have said something in between games? Could I have said something differently? And do you take that to heart?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I can't count, like, how many – like, I can probably replay nearly every single one of our losses in my head, like, just off like land losses.
Hmm.
And a lot of times you go back and you're like, yeah, I probably should have done that, or maybe I shouldn't have, or maybe this would have caused this. And it's like, a lot of the times I'm very happy with what I say, and it just comes from, I guess, maturity. Because I remember when I was with Queso, and this got me a lot of hate. Calm was yelling and I was yelling back. It was an attempt to just rile up my guys.
Yeah.
And that was the point of it. Didn't work. And we lost the series. And in reality, it probably cost us that land. Because I think we would have beat G2. It's life. And I had to look back and I'd be like, yeah, that cost me a land. And then it ended up kind of costing me my job. Kind of not, because it was a bunch of org stuff. Because I could not stand working with Queso. But yeah, like that's probably the biggest one. When it comes to recent times, I wasn't on stage for Falcons. With Dig, I don't really have any regrets of things I've said or didn't say in between games. I was kind of in a almost an FU mentality of like, we're just going to make this work. Like, I could not care about anything my players have to say. This is going to make it work. And it worked. With M80, I tried to be a lot more player focused, or I guess kind of a little bit more passive, and it didn't work. And that was my mistake, where I felt like I had softer personality, so I had to be softer on them,
right,
as well as them living away from home, and it just didn't work, because eventually coddling just leads to bad habits, and that kind of killed me. And I probably should have been a lot more ruthless after the first split. Like, I remember me and JC talked about, should we make a roster move? I said yes, he said yes for a different player, and I just settled on, we'll stick with it.
Okay.
That was the wrong move. To be honest, if you lose three quarterfinals, someone had to get kicked, right? We didn't. So it's a lot more of like the actual process of, okay, should I have just stuck with my gut a lot more? Yeah. But I don't think there's very often where I go, yeah, I should have said this, or I should have said this. It's like, I tend to think a lot about what I'm going to say, when I'm going to say it. When it comes to in-between games, yeah, that's a lot less like formulated, but I still have a structure in how I speak. So it's not as much like random and off the tongue. Random and off the tongue was my first line. That happens.
Yep.
With Dig, I kind of had the gist of it. And to be honest, I had it pretty locked in by Swiss, because I was like, well, at this point, it's just like whatever happens, happens. It's like... Yep. Our team's chalked, man. Like, everyone's 90% of the people had us going like 2-3, losing to god awful teams in Swiss.
Yeah,
I'm like, if we're that bad, like, just put us out of our misery anyway. I'll go enjoy my vacation in Dallas.
Yeah,
but yeah, I with Falcons, I wasn't on stage, so it always made it slightly more difficult to be able to judge that.
Yeah, one thing that I noticed I've gradually been able to do over the years now, and obviously in my third year now, is, based on situations, almost have like a mental template of reactions, because I'm going off past experiences as well. So, for example, if there's conflict or if there's some individual who's not bringing something to the table, it's about like understanding what I've done in the past. Has that worked? Has that not? Could I take a different action now? Can I still apply that same thing I did in the past now as well? Has that something that you've experienced before, like having that mental template of what works, what doesn't?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I remember it was the first final in Game 6 against G2, like in between Game 6 and Game 7, it was Vatira and Ryze kind of yelling at each other, which people will say, like, oh, why were you fighting? It's like, man, we both want to win. And Ryze basically just told Vatira to drop the fucking ego. Like, we're here to win. Stop playing for yourself. Just trust what we're going to do. And I remember it pretty much came down to, like, Round 4 of the Swiss in M80. Regional 6, like, I remember I just snapped, and I'm like, guys, we gotta cut the shit. Like, let's stop being pansies right here and just, like, actually play with some balls. Like, and sometimes, unfortunately, you need to just get stabbed and be like, well, still alive, let's go. Yeah. And it works quite often. And that's why I said I think I got a lot wrong with being a little bit too soft.
Yeah.
So it's just a conflict of personalities. Is part of the reason why the team didn't work, but it is what it is. Like, and that's obviously like a cop out answer, but I've done a lot of reflecting, and I almost always do the reflection on the plane home of like, what should I have done better? I make my I have a notes app, and it's just filled with a bunch of reflections post LAN and things I want to do for the next 3-6 months.
Awesome. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's probably as important if I need to reflect as much as the players.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important, but I also think it's important to realize, like, to not go overboard too much and to recognize, like, I did what I did. I couldn't have done anything more. You know, at the end of the day, it's on the players themselves to take acknowledgement and take their own, I guess, their own acknowledgement of respect as well for each other. Like, I think respect is one of those things that you don't have to have respect for your teammates, right? You know, they're rocking up, you're rocking up, you're putting in the hours to be there, you're putting in the hours to be at LAN, to perform. So I think, you know, having respect for your team is a big thing as well.
And having respect for yourself as well, just as much of like, yeah, I know what I can do. Like, let me actually show it, as opposed to, well, what about the guy on my right, or what about the guy on my left? Like, even if they're not picking up the slack, you got to do what you got to do. Because at the end of the day, y'all are still working toward the same goal.
Yeah, no, 100%, definitely. One thing I've been thinking about, and it's probably a really good segue to bring up, but it also sort of merges in as well, is this whole idea of personality versus skill. I think when we look at building teams, and obviously you're probably one of the best to ask about this because talk about building teams, right? What do we look for? What do you look for, I guess? Because I feel like it's a hard thing to sort of go. I had this conversation with a few of the boys recently, and it's about, all right, do we look for someone who's really skillful but maybe isn't out open, or they might not want to be as talkative? Their personality might not be as high, but, you know, they bring the skill, right? They're fiends on the sticks. Or they have a really good bubbly personality. They can communicate. They can be open, but maybe their skill isn't as high. Obviously, the middle ground would be having both those levels, but do you prioritize either or?
There comes a moment where skill is more important than personality.
Right.
And people don't necessarily want to hear that. But if someone's a dick, but he scores a goal a game, I'm not taking the friendly guy who's getting 0.2 goals a game. Never. My job is to win.
Yeah.
My job is to win. Right? I don't get judged based on, oh, our team environment was so good, right? And you see it in traditional sports. Like, England is the classic example, right? They've all talked about how great the team environment is in England, and then they play god-awful football, and they lose. And people, and suddenly all the narratives about, oh, this is a family, this is such a great team, gone. Because they lost. And that's all you get judged on as a coach. That is all you get judged on.
Mm.
No one ever will know what goes on behind the scenes. Nor really should they.
Yeah.
And that's life, right? So most of the time, if there's a difference, I'm always taking skill. I will take someone who's going to blow up the team in 6 months as opposed to someone who's going to keep the team around for 6 months longer than they should have been around every time. To be honest, that was probably the case with Evo. Evo would have the most skill easily by any other option. Could we have picked up someone like Delta? And yeah, our team environment was fine. We were a bit bored, but we played whatever. Evo blew us up. However, we made a major.
Mm.
What raised my stock more? Having a good team environment or making the major?
Major. Yeah.
Making the major. So it's like, I at that point, I take the skill.
Mm.
When it comes down to, like, what do I ideally look for? It's usually based first of, do they have the mechanical talent to compete internationally? Mm. Yes or no? If it's no, it's chalked off there. Then it comes down to, how does the personality fit within the group? What's their work ethic like? Communication, I think, can grow based on, like, how confident you feel in the circle or how comfortable you can feel, which a lot of young players don't necessarily feel that right from the start, which I don't think is fair to hold it against them compared to a veteran.
Yeah.
It just means I tend to take a little bit more of a leadership role, whether for good or for bad.
Yeah.
But number one priority is skill. Number one priority will always be skill. And then it comes down to all the other factors. If you have two players who are incredibly close in skill, yeah, then you take the guy who's in 15 minutes early scrims, who is an incredibly good leader and is incredibly good at making his teammates feel comfortable, then you go through all those things. However, if it's just who's better, I'm taking a top four player from Europe than a top two player from any minor region, minus probably, well, I guess from like OC, APAC, SSI. It's just, there's too much of a skill gap.
Yeah.
You have to kind of respect that.
Mm. Do you think that, now this is playing devil's advocate, do you think that there's players who skill increase when they have a good team around them, as opposed to if their skill wasn't as high and their and the team around them wasn't as good. I think that probably makes sense, though.
Yeah, I mean, if you build a team around someone, obviously they're going to look better. I think there's been a lot of examples of that. Like, LJ is probably the most recent example when he first got put on SSG because Oxygen hard played around him. Of course, he's going to look better. Even Daniel on SSG looked a lot better because he was a lot more of the focal point. Beast Mode on V1, probably similar, but he looked better. TRK on the Falcons roster with Ahmed and Khaled looked a lot better than he does now because he's got better parts around them.
Yep.
But eventually, most people are professional enough. Maybe not in this esport because it is a very young esport, but most esports, you can just say, all right, screw it. My goal is to win. Your goal is to win. That's it. We don't need to be friends outside of this job. We don't need to do anything. I trust you to do your responsibilities. You trust me to do my responsibilities. If we either of us don't, then we'll have a problem. We'll figure that out, and that's fine. But we're here to win. I'm here to win. I'm not here to be your best friend. If we're friends along the way, perfect. But, I mean, you look at NRG, like, they were friends, and they missed every major. We killed each other. We hated each other. We made a major. And people are going to say we were more successful every day of the week. Did at least one of those players go on to have better careers than the other three? Yeah, fair play. But it's fine to have a team that you're understanding. We're just in here for the short haul. Of we don't have to get along. We're here to do a job. And besides that, after the season, it's fine. It's fine. We're not going to be here for long.
But do you think that if a team doesn't get along with each other, it can lead to that distrust earlier? Like, I'm not going to trust him that he's going to get the ball. I'm not going to trust him that he's going to make the right comm. He's not going to comm early enough for me. And that can lead to, I guess, on-game things?
I guess it comes down to communication more than anything. If you're able to, like, express, like, yeah, just don't trust him. Because I've had that conversation with players. I'm like, why are you doing this? She's like, dude, I don't trust him.
Oh, right.
And they're like, oh, like, like, sorry, you have to trust him if you want to have more success in your own career.
Yeah.
Okay. And boom, now we're in a better spot. And there's very few players that'll hold that big of, like, a petty argument of, like, well, I don't trust him, or, well, I don't do this. It's like, all right, whatever. Like, we're here to win. It's fine. Has that probably bit me in like, the Achilles heel a few times? Yeah. Because I tend to respect, like, this ideology of, like, eh, we're here to win. You're here to win. I'm here to win.
Yeah.
Put the bullshit aside. Leave it. That's like, leave all the baggage at the door. When we're here, we're here to do a job. Because you don't have to be friends to do a job. I don't know why it's only esports. Because even in traditional sports, or, like, the F1's probably, like, my favorite sport, bar soccer, teammates hate each other. It's like, and that's just normal.
Yeah.
But they have to follow team orders for the best possible result for the team, because at the end of the day, the main standings they get paid on is the team, not their individual ones. But everyone cares about their individual accolades. So it's like, well, it's a very hard balance. It's not an easy one to pick up.
Yeah. Speaking of balance, I found it tricky sometimes in the past to the situations where, do I step in, do I say something, or do I just let it play out? Do I intervene, or do I just let things go naturally its own way, and maybe that's its better way of finding harmony? Say, for if there's conflict or if there's something that's not going right, do I just let it play out? Do I see if it occurs again?
Yeah. I mean, I had this a lot at the start of my career where I was just getting used to, like, understanding conflict as normal in a team. Whereas now I'm a little bit more like, yeah, you guys should fight a little bit. Like, everyone should kind of be on their toes a little bit of, like, nah, man, like, what the hell are you doing? Like, you're costing us here.
Yeah.
Because me telling a player, you need to sleep and wake up on time, it's not the same as, dude, what the hell are you doing, man? Like, why are you late to scrims, or why is this happening?
Yeah.
It's different.
100%.
It's always going to mean more coming from your teammate than a coach.
Oh, I love that. Yes, it does.
But players are so scared to say, because it's like, what if he hates me after? If one comment is going to make your teammate hate you, your team is done anyway. Sorry. You'll never be able to criticize them. And the most important thing in tournaments is to be able to be like, what are you doing? And you fix it.
I love that. I'm so glad you said that. So glad. it definitely helps to validify some of my own previous times for sure. Now, one thing for you, do you get nervous on game day?
Yeah.
Because I get real nervous, especially when there's moments that I know that I can't control.
It's not even that. I remember I talked about this with my team even coming into Regional 1. I'm like, the first day of qualifiers when we're playing like Champ 2s, I'm shitting myself. No, and it's every day. It's just nerves. I know there's no way in hell we'll lose the series. It is just nerves.
Yeah.
And then they started saying like, oh, I talk more for playoff days. I don't. I just talk more every tournament day.
Mm.
Because it's a total nerves thing. I think Regional 6 was the first time I was actually just chilled out during Regional. Where I'm like, we've put the work in. I pretty much know where we're going to finish.
Mm.
To be honest, I thought maybe we'll get a top 8 and we'll bomb out. At, you know, quite in a maybe fashion. But, yeah, 9 through 11 was probably a fair indicative of where we were the past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But it kind of hit the point of, like, I remember I had a conversation with Nats where I was like, we've lost 5 quarterfinals before. You're still here. You're still going to go home to your family. Yeah. They're still going to congratulate you. Yeah. They're still going to love you. Your friends are still going to be excited to see you when you go back to school. Mm. And that's not just that's AJ. That's yours. That's every player I've worked with. At the end of the day, we're here because we do what we love. Does the world end if we lose the series? No. You do get another chance. You at least get the chance to have another chance.
Mm.
If you get worse, that happens. Maybe, like, people say that was your last chance. Yeah, to an extent. But it's very rare you go from, like, world's level winning to just nothing.
Mm.
Like, the only recent player in time is probably Chronic, where he went from, like, top 4s consistently and now not really anywhere. But besides that, it's like,
yeah.
I guess it's hard because we did have a global pandemic that quite literally was like, yeah, this may be your last chance to win something.
Mm.
But in the normality of the world now, it's like, no, it sucks, but you'll have another season. It's life. Like, you can't win every time. So it's not taking losses as personal, because I still take losses incredibly personal.
Mm.
I can't count how many times like I've lost at LAN. Now I've gotten better at it. I used to just kind of lock myself in a room for a day. I'm just like, I have to accept it.
Yeah.
Because I'm quite an emotional person in the sense of I can be a bit of a hothead and say stupid shit. Were you there for San Diego?
I was.
No,
not San Diego. I thought you said something else. Yeah. No. Why? What happened there?
I remember we lost to Vitality and K-Corp.
Yeah.
And if we beat Vitality, no matter what, because how the group was situated, we were through.
Yeah.
We lost 5 1-goal games over the 2 series. Right. And it's like, which Vitality got us off 8. K-Corp went on to win it.
Yeah.
And I just snapped after it. And because of how badly San Diego was set up, it was a bunch of like tents all in the same room. So everyone could hear me. And I don't regret what I said, but it was a lot of like, you guys caused this. Like, this was what happens when we do 6 weeks without any scrims. You guys show up late. You have cost yourself a chance at a top 8. You have cost yourself a chance at actually making it through. And Dig Management fired me for that. I remember Boston was like, because Boston was there for us, Boston Scott.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, bro, like, our coach says worse things every day to keep us on our heels. And it's just like, I think teams need to kick up the ass. I think you need to be confrontational. I think you need to be able to reflect quite quick. And this all came from nerves. But I wasn't nervous coming into that. I'm very rarely nervous of, like, understanding where we're going to be. It's just general nerves, even if it makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. I'm trying to think if I've ever been extremely nervous. I think it's different. I think when I'm online, I'm just so much more nervous in comparison to in person. Because in person, it feels like, all right, all 4 of us on stage, we're there together, you know?
Yeah.
It's almost like the nerves are bouncing off each other and we can sort of take that and almost encapsulate it. But when I'm in my room, I'm like, I'm sitting in front of my screen. Sometimes I remember back on Renegades days, I was pacing around my room or I was like lying on my bed just watching the screen because I can't do anything.
Yeah.
I guess that sort of segues into where I was going. I've noticed, I don't know if it was you or I know that there's some people, I know that Sathew does it sometimes in terms of saying things during the game.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that? What impact can that have, do you think?
I come with Dig because realistically, like, Evo It's like his first real pro team. It just didn't have it up to speed.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't good enough, quick enough. And I was like, okay, where's the stopgap here? The stopgap is I have to account for him. Just
Right.
shut up and play. I'll do everything else.
Right.
It worked.
That's crazy.
So I remember we talked about it after day one because we went 0-2 down versus, I guess I can pull up the regional, but I remember we played Gen G. We went 0-2 down. We got a game back. Or no, we got swept by Gen G. Then we played Complexity, went 0-2 down. I started calming. We lost in game five. Koi, who had not won a single series in three regionals, were 2-0 up on us in the series. I started calming. We reverse swept. Then we played V1. I calmed the whole time. We 3-0'd. And we kind of had to have the conversation of, we're 0-8 when I haven't calmed. And I think we were like maybe 14-1 or something stupid when I had calmed. And it's like, all right, when it's that big of a gap, you can't really have an ego. We're just like, screw it, we'll do it. We beat SSG. We did it the entire split. It averaged out a little bit more, but based on our skill, it was kind of expected. I didn't do it as much with M80, which is probably a bit of a regret because I trusted a little bit more in the veteran players.
Yeah,
didn't really work out. With my new team, I think I'll probably do it. I think it's just too helpful of calming things that players are not going to be calming, mainly off ball.
Right.
Of like, okay, this space is open or no one's top of the box. Like, people very rarely calm if someone's mid or not on defense, because that just completely changes how you challenge a situation if you know you can force it mid. Or like thirds over committed or thirds all the way back, so there's this huge gap opening up between a second and third mid. People don't calm it, but it's still just little timings of you have space after second or beat one space. Like, it's just little things, or X is zero or Y is zero, or a boost spawns in 3 seconds because you can calculate all the boosts if you do it in your head enough.
Yeah.
And it's just little things because it's like you can't expect players to track all that stuff. So I think it's helpful because coaches aren't coming as much.
Yeah.
It's just little things.
Interesting. Interesting. I didn't know that you actually full on replaced him in terms of comms. I thought you were just adding into it, but that makes it even more interesting.
It was like 50-50.
Yeah.
Like Eva, it was probably 50-50. It wasn't full on replacing, but when he was screen sharing, I was like fully calming for him. And then he was adding what he could as like he was getting used to it.
Yeah. I guess the thing you can't calm is like you can't currently calm his intention, right? Because you don't know what he's going to do on the ball.
But I could calm what the defender was doing.
Yeah.
So that would help with his decision making. That was probably the closest. Or, like, I a lot of times was, like, take a 50 out of defense, and I would just tell him what to do.
Yeah.
Or take a 50 back, slow the game down in the corners, because every time a player's under pressure in the corners, if you've been starved out, you're going to bang the ball away, and then you put your team in a worse spot. If you have someone saying, calm, slow, 50, 50, 50, eventually you're going to go, huh, I probably should 50.
Yeah.
And you just do it, and it's the one less thing that he has to remember.
Interesting. Is there any other? Is there a lot of other coaches that do that? I know I saw that Sathu doing it at London.
Me and Hunter saw that. I don't think Chrome does it. I don't know if Torment does it. I don't think Sad does it. Don't think any of the European coaches do it, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did. Falcons don't do it. I don't think anything do it. Don't know about the OCA pack.
Yeah.
Asia teams. Furia, I'm not sure.
Crazy. I mean, I think it definitely would help, especially you have that one player who just isn't as confident in his comms. Just help give it a bit more flavor.
People are just scared to be different.
Yeah. Who knows? Could get some traction after this episode. Could see some coaches starting to do it.
Maybe. I don't think I'm that
influential. We'll claim you as the originator, though. You'll always be the origin.
I try.
Heck yeah. I think as we start to, what are we at the moment? 54 minutes as we start to turn off the gas and roll down the hill for the end of the episode. We've explored quite a bit. I've really enjoyed it. Learned different mindsets about, I guess, your own mentality and nerves, comms, everything. It's been great. I guess one thing that I wanted to do for this season is start to incorporate towards the end, almost like a funny reflection, personal story. It might not even be Rocket League related, or it might not even be esports related, but anything that's come up recently in your life that's sort of been good that you wanted to share. It could even be a personal win, maybe, like if you've done something really well that you wanted to sort of give your own debt to.
God, I graduated college, paid that off. That was a grind. I remember I did like a full-on extra semester in the summer to be able to graduate 6 months early.
Yeah.
To move to Toronto with the team.
That's massive. That's
my graduation as well.
You missed
because
it.
Of it. But yeah. Like I could have gone back. I didn't really want to be honest. But it does kind of suck. Like I've missed out on two graduations because one was COVID and then one was I had graduated early, so it's like, well, I'm lucky mainly to my mom and dad who I guess kind of wanted to see it, but to me it's not really that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Besides that, I'm back in the gym. I figure I gotta look good, you know, Greek god build for next season.
Yeah.
So hopefully I'm back online. And if I'm not, well then I look great in my office. So
that's it.
I guess that's the trade off.
We love that. Thinking about it now, I missed my graduation as well for LAN.
Really?
Yeah, I missed my postgrad 2021 for Worlds. I was like, am I going to Worlds or am I doing a postgrad? I think it's a pretty easy answer.
America's better anyway.
I mean, I don't know about that.
For sure. Come
on. Dallas, the thing I didn't like about Dallas is that I could not find a supermarket. I had this conversation with so many people. I couldn't find a supermarket in like a 10-kilometer proximity just so I could go get some fruit or something normal.
Where we lived, it was we had a gas station like a mile up the road, but like the first actual like grocery store was 12 miles away from me.
Jeez.
And I can't count how many times I'd be driving in the car and Norris would try and backseat drive and like tell me what to do, which is even better because the guy doesn't have a license. He's never driven a car in his life. And he was telling me how to navigate 4 or 5 lane highways. And it's like, I'm 22, never been in an accident, knock on wood. I actually avoided a full-on accident in Texas because people don't know how to drive.
Oh, geez.
We were driving like 5 miles an hour, which makes this even worse.
5 miles an hour?
Yeah. Because like we were coming to a stoplight.
Yeah.
We were coming to a stoplight. So I was merging from the left into the middle lane. Guy was from the right. He is behind me. My car is quite clearly heading. There's no... car get hit when we just turned into 2024 because of my ego. Sorry, that guy's driving a shit box. He can deal with it.
Oh, he suddenly just turned into a massive robot.
Me?
Yep.
That is heartbreaking. Be good now.
Nah, you're good now, though. You're a robot for like 10 seconds. That's all good.
I should have ran a pink spike. Where was I at in the story before I DC'd?
Something about you coming to a stop. That's all I got.
Yeah. So we're coming to a stop, like a red light. It was a 3-lane highway. I was trying to merge into the middle lane. He was trying to merge into the middle lane. Fortunately, when you see my hands, I am the car that is in front.
Yeah.
So he's turning into my back quarter panel. I was merging. He was merging. I had to swerve out of the way.
Jeez.
Yours pretty much was like, why'd you swerve? Like, you got to be a little bit more of like a bully on the road. And to be fair, I have a car from 2024. That guy had a shit box from early 2000s. If his car gets hit, it's cheaper to buy a new car.
Yeah.
If my car gets hit, my insurance is through the roof because I'm 22.
Yeah.
I've never had an accident in 6 years. I'm not starting it today.
W.
But yeah, driving in Texas sucked. I think I turned onto the wrong highway like twice. So I ended up paying like $3. Not fun driving.
For like a toll or whatever.
Yeah. Brutal. Stop. Happens.
Brutal. Awesome. Oh, that's good. Speaking of which, obviously, the news is out that Joris is subbing in for Chiefs at EWC. So that'll be a good fun time over there. Hopefully, we'll see. Maybe I'll have a few more stories I can relapse back to you about the old man. But
I love how you're talking in like third person. Like, hey, you're on the team.
Yeah, I know. So no, but that'll be good. That'll be it'll be an interesting time. What is your opinion? Do you reckon that an AU player is going to switch up the dynamic.
I think if you guys get a top eight, it's a success. I think the realistic is like, yeah, it's groups. You guys will get one and two in groups pretty easily, just because I don't think there's a lot of good teams there. Like the SSA and APAC teams will fill the bottom slot in every group.
Mm.
So then it just comes down to, can you scam a win against a top eight team?
Yeah.
Maybe, because obviously like travel and it's insanely hot and sleep schedules, maybe because people aren't taking the land as serious, which is insane for a $500,000 land. But maybe. I think the goal was top eight for you guys. If you hit that,
yep,
I don't think you'll get any farther. But I think that would be like, oh my god, OC got a top eight.
Yeah. I will say, it'll be good. Be good to have a little bit of a mixture and you know, see what his leadership can bring for the boys as well. It's going to be tricky because obviously we're not really scrimming, so we're just going to rock up and then scrim in Saudi for a few days and then we're playing. So, but we'll see how we go. It'll be a good time.
Yeah, and awesome. He's developed hugely as a leader this year. I think you'll really enjoy working with him.
Yeah, should be good. I mean, especially for those listening back to the episode in a month's time, we'll know how we went, so it'll be a bit of a foreshadow. But alas, as we sort of turn down the window, we've just hit the hour mark, so I think that's a pretty good time to wrap it up. For everyone listening, because we do have a lot of listeners, where can we find you on all the socials? I know we did it last time, but if you want to plug it again, where can we find you, mate?
For X or Twitter, it would be Nick on our own. Yeah, first time ever I heard a content creator do that the other day, and I went, oh shit, this is really how we're doing
it. Oh god.
Yeah. And then Twitch is Nick on our own as well, and my YouTube. And that's, I kind of stick with the same branding for everything.
Yep. Nick on our own. Keep it clean, keep it fresh. Love it. Awesome. Thanks, mate. Well, yeah, as I said, really enjoyed jumping on today and sort of going through quite a few topics, sort of a recap of your, I guess, career over the last 2 years with some insights about some ups and downs and, you know, your mindset towards a few different topics, which has been really good to share. And I really think that a lot of our listeners will take it away with take something away with it, which is, you know, always the key for Mind Clickers to gain some insight, which is what we've done today. So I really appreciate it, brother, to jump on and share some of that things. Really means a lot.
I appreciate you inviting me.
100%. I guess we'll end it there.